Since the David Pakman Show doesn't take money from big corporations, we depend on individual viewer support. Subscribe and support us today at davidpakman.com/membership.
The David Pakman Show at davidpakman.com.
It is August 17th of 2015, meaning it is exactly 10 years since August 17th of 2005, the first day of the David Pakman Show. Back then it was called Midweek Politics with David Pakman. Lewis was not on the show at the time. This is really cringeworthy, but I'm going to play for you just a little bit of the first show I ever did, and I was listening to a bunch of this today. Our members have access to this entire archive, Lewis, that includes like all of 2005, 2006, 2007, when the show was pretty tough to listen to. This makes me cringe, but just because it is the 10-year anniversary and we should really be celebrating that we're still on the air, while most shows that started 10 years ago have been long off the air, we're going to listen to a little bit of this together. Lewis and I have been listening and laughing about it all morning. Let's take a listen. Here we go. This is after I played a Pink Floyd song, because I used to also throw songs into the show.
You've been listening to Pink Floyd performing Money live at Live 8 last month in London. All of the music in today's program is going to be from Live 8. This is 103.3 WXOJ LP Northampton. And how fitting it is to hear a song called Money, because being a community radio station, one that hasn't even been up 2 weeks, money's always something that's in short supply. And again, all the music today will be from July's Live 8 concert, Pink Floyd performed in London. And this is the debut episode of Midweek Politics. I'm David Pakman. Our phone number here is 413-585-1033.
Right.
You can call at any time if you'd like to talk to us on the air. And I want to get right into it because there's a lot to talk about today. The first thing is the 2008 presidential election, which is still years away, but some of the events that are going on right now are definitely going to be important. People like Hillary Clinton, Mitt Romney have some decisions to make, and also speculating about these things is fun now because everyone is still in the race, even people that as soon as campaign season starts aren't going to be in the race. A recent poll that came out asking people who they'd rather have be their nominee. Democrats were asked about who they'd like to see be the Democratic nominee, Republicans the Republican nominee. Hillary Clinton has jumped out. I could saying that she's a favorite would be an understatement. Almost half of all...
I mean, Lewis, it is just cringeworthy, right? There's something there which obviously developed into the show we have now, but it is stunning to listen to that.
Yeah, would anyone who is listening right now hear that and say, oh, this is a show I want to listen to regularly? I think the answer is probably pretty clear. It's you sound like a completely different person, really.
It is really incredible, and it has been 10 years, and we've got so many exciting things coming up. We do have a membership special, which people have been just absolutely loving, where we're giving you a discount on a membership, plus a free T-shirt and a free bumper sticker, all to celebrate our 10-year anniversary. The special ends tonight at midnight Pacific time. To sign up, you go to davidpakman.com/10 years. That's davidpakman.com/10 years. And this is, you know, we've been here 10 years and we're going to continue to be here, and consider it an investment in independent media, ever improving independent media. And part of that, I want to catch people up. We are starting to sort of whittle down the possible names for the new network that will be the parent network of the David Pakman Show and will also include new programming we're going to do. Some of the better choices still in the running are the Independent Mind Network, or IMN, the Independent News Network, or INN, Liberal Media Exchange, PakView Network, or PVN was one people came up with, the Progressive Angle Network, Progressive Modern Media, or PMM, Progressive News Now, PNN, and Relevant News Network, RNN. Another idea was the Progressive Watch Network. Some funny ideas that we won't be using: the Progressive Libtard Opinion Misinformation Show. That was a troll idea. 50 Shades of Pakman was another one that was suggested. And then if we want to sort of go off of Fox shows, the O'Pakman Factor, Pakman and Friends, The Pakman File, and Out Pakmaned were all ideas that were thrown out. And Lewis, I think this is possibly the funniest suggestion of all so far. Hair and Balanced. Hair and Balanced.
Yes, of course, making fun of whatever that is on top of your head. It's a pretty good one, pretty clever.
Lewis submitted his suggestions to me. They are the Progressive Collective and Logic Gate Network. Now, Lewis, explain that. What is Logic Gate Network?
Or just the Logic Gate. I think maybe the Logic Gate would be good. Well, I wanted to use names that weren't network or things that sound similar to that that are just used far too frequently. So collective and gate, I thought, were two good words that might, fill that space.
My sole best idea that I've come up with, I really am not good at this, is TDPN, which sort of has the DP branding, and we could use our DP logo from the David Pakman Show and turn it into TDPN, the David Pakman Network, but of course we will never call it that. We'll just call it TDPN, and it'll be a thing, like ESPN or TYT or whatever else. So keep sending in your ideas, your thoughts, new ideas, which of these you like. And last thing, we are accepting books. Any books that you want to get rid of, our new set, we're going to have two sets actually at the new studio, a standard newsroom set, and then more of a library setting. We just need books for the background. So you can send any books you want to get rid of to our attorney, Attorney Michael Gove, that's G-O-V-E, 277 Main Street, Suite 206, in Northampton, Massachusetts, 01060, The David Pakman Show, care of Attorney Mike Gove. That's it, Lewis. It's been 10 years, and it is all happening.
10 years. Wow. Yes. And I encourage everyone to not listen to those really old shows that you just heard a sample of. Please avoid that at all costs.
Paraguay recently made the decision to deny an abortion to a 10-year-old rape victim. Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee supports the decision to prevent this 10-year-old who has been impregnated by a rapist who was also her stepfather, preventing that little girl from having an abortion. This was on CNN's State of the Union. The former Arkansas governor, who is also running for president, said the following about why he would say no to the incest rape pregnancy of a 10-year-old. And an abortion in that case. Take a listen.
I think what we have to do, Dana, is remember that creating one problem that is horrible. I mean, let nobody be misled. A 10-year-old girl being raped is horrible. But does it solve a problem by taking the life of an innocent child? And that's really the issue. I know people. I worked for a man for several years, James Robinson, who was the result of a rape. His mother went to three doctors in Houston, Texas in 1943, begged doctors to abort the baby. None of them would do it. They all refused. Today, his organization feeds, cares for, living capacity for water to hundreds of thousands of people across the world. That would never have happened, Dana. So when I think about one horror, I also think about the possibilities that exist. And I just don't want to think that somehow we discount a human life.
And that's
the extent to which you will further ruin this 10-year-old's life by forcing her to birth this child is inconceivable. Paraguay law allows abortions only, quote, in very rare cases when it's deemed necessary to save a woman's life, as Think Progress has noted. We don't know whether this pregnancy could put this 10-year-old's life in danger. It certainly might. But according to the Paraguay law, this does not qualify for one of these exceptions, even though it is an incest rape pregnancy and the victim is 10 years old. And Mike Huckabee took a firm stand on this. I told you last month he would not rule out using soldiers to stop abortions if he were president. And now apparently the pain, suffering, and lifelong impact of forcing a 10-year-old rape victim to birth her stepfather's child is not enough, apparently, for Mike Huckabee to say, okay, this would be one of those exceptions.
Yeah, it's well, we knew this would be his answer. We knew he would say this. And I think most people who are we could say nuts, but as extremely religious as he is, would probably say the same thing. What can you do? People have just been warped by religion.
And we know that so-called pro-lifers like Mike Huckabee are really only concerned for unborn children, but this really shows that to us. No concern for the 10-year-old child. The concern is until the child is born. After that point, welfare programs, no. Improving public schools? Absolutely not. Reasonable sexual sex ed? Absolutely not. Not forcing 10-year-olds to birth children? Nah, we're not worried about that. It's just about the unborn children that we want to protect. And this is yet another one of those small government double standards, right? Small government, except when it comes to the government forcibly imposing his religious ideas on the rest of us, then government can get pretty big.
Imagine how big government would be in this country if Mike Huckabee implemented his theocracy or whatever you'd want to call it. I mean, it would be, I don't know, it might be the most controlling government of all time.
Lewis, we've talked many times about the sort of double standard that exists with non-Israeli Jews and a sort of assumed allegiance to Israel and double allegiance. And we saw that embarrassing Diane Rehm on NPR embarrassing herself by asking Bernie Sanders about his dual citizenship to Israel and the U.S. and whether that would cause a conflict of interest. Of course, Bernie Sanders is Jewish, but he is not a citizen of Israel. And we've talked many times about the absurdity of this. And there's now an insane story that I was just disgusted by over the weekend. There's a Spanish music festival which demanded that Jewish American reggae star Matis Yahu endorse Palestinian statehood. And when he said, no, I'm not going to do a video endorsing Palestinian statehood just to play there, the concert told him, you can no longer play here. This is the Rototom Sunsplash Reggae Festival, which said no Matis Yahu on August 22nd because he would not make a written or video statement backing, quote, the Palestinians' right to a state. The BDS movement, the Boycott, Divestment, Sanction movement, which is one of the most vile and heinous groups that is out there right now, was putting a lot of pressure on festival organizers. And Matis Yahu was also at risk, in a sense, or being pressured because other artists threatened to not show up if Matis Yahu didn't make this statement. Now, Lewis, let's be very clear. Stu, the bassist for Matis Yahu from Dub Trio, his backing band, is a fan of the show. You've hung out with him. I've hung out with him. You hung out with Matis Yahu when they were in Austin, and we've been to a bunch of concerts in the Northeast on our end. And so we know them. And if that conflict of interest comes up, I want that to be clear. This absolutely disgusts me, regardless of who the artist is. And why, Lewis? Because Matis Yahu is not Israeli. Matis Yahu is an American Jew. And there's no reason whatsoever why he should speak more for the foreign policy of Israel as a result of being a Jewish American than a French American should be responsible for addressing French foreign policy if they're going to play a show in Australia, for example. But we know that it is far more acceptable to demand statements from random Jews around the world, regardless of their connection to Israel. And this is the perfect example of the double standard that exists with regard to this. And let me say one more thing. With regard to the BDS movement, the BDS movement seeks to strip Jewish Israelis of the exact same rights they claim to support for Palestinians. And the main goal of the BDS movement is the replacement of a Jewish state with an Arab state. This has been stated publicly many times, including by its co-founder. None of that matters here, though. My point here is Matis Yahu is an American. He has no reason whatsoever to speak to Israeli foreign policy. And we know, and sadly, my dad's wife is from Spain, and I've spent a lot of time in Spain. There is significant anti-Semitism in Spain, and it is not surprising to me that this is the country where this took place. I love Spain, love the food, love the people, love the beaches, love so many things about it, but there is an anti-Semitism problem in Spain.
Well, we discussed recently that anti-Semitism across all of Europe seems to be ramping up. Somehow, that's what's happening. I mean, come on, this is a reggae festival. I really doubt anyone else performing at this festival was asked to do something so ridiculous.
And I'd be curious, Lewis, would any Muslim performer, be they American Muslims or French Muslims or whoever, would they be asked to make some sort of video statement denouncing Hamas's actions or the actions of ISIS? No, when that happens, actually, when random Muslims are brought on and asked to denounce terror, we actually rightly point out why are random Muslims from the U.S., for example, asked to denounce ISIS terror? Why is that a position they're put in by default? we absolutely denounce it, and it would be our double standard as progressives if we didn't denounce this as well.
Yeah. So it's you're right. Would you ask random Egyptian, random Muslims to denounce FGM in Egypt or something like that? It's just ridiculous. But for many people, you don't have to be an anti-Semite. For many people, if you meet someone who's Jewish, they just automatically think that you have this connection to Israel and that you are able to comment on it.
All right. That's my view on it. I think it's quite unequivocating. Send me your thoughts. I know, as always, we will get some emails from people saying, no, there is a difference. Jews in the U.S. actually have this particular reason why they are responsible for what Israel does, but Muslims are not, or Catholics or Christians are not. Send me your thoughts on it. I look forward to it. And we'll do a follow-up if there's a desire for us to do that.
The David Pakman Show at davidpakman.com.
The David Pakman Show is made possible by you, our audience, through the membership program, and by Polaris Financial Partners, a progressive wealth management firm offering investment solutions, retirement planning, and 401k administration at polarisfinancial.net. Repair the World Apparel, offering eco-friendly clothing manufactured using no new natural resources or chemical dyes, available at repairtheworldnow.com. ShareFile, provider of secure file transfer for businesses at ShareFile.com. If you're like me, you're probably sick of hearing the tired old plutocratic financial advice of buy gold, buy this stock, short that one. There's a better alternative. Polaris Financial Partners is a progressive full-service wealth management firm that understands the economy does better under progressive presidents and knows how to invest under Republicans, too. Specializing in investment solutions, retirement planning, and 401ks, Polaris Financial Partners tailors the best fit solution for your financial needs. Visit Polaris on the web at polarisfinancial.net. Securities offered through Cataray Grant & Company Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Polaris Financial and Cataray Grant are separate entities.
All the music from the David Pakman Show is brought to you by Nathan Michael Marcuse. For extended listening and downloads, visit nmmusic.ca.
Do we really need all this Hollywood when it drags us down like it should?
In our search for an official clothing provider for the David Pakman Show, we evaluated several companies, and only one stood out for its commitment to quality, comfort, and sustainability. Repair the World Apparel manufactures a full line of men's, women's, children's, and unisex clothing created using no new natural resources or chemical dyes. They've pioneered a fabric manufacturing process that is both kind to the earth and amazing to the touch. See their full line of clothing at repairtheworldnow.com and learn about what makes Repair the World different. That's repairtheworldnow.com.
Welcome back to the David Pakman Show.
Our program is funded directly by you, viewers of the show, through the David Pakman Show membership program at davidpakman.com/membership. Today's new member of the day is John Canino. John, thank you for being a supporter of the show. And for the rest of today, because it's our 10-year anniversary of the show, you can subscribe at a discount and get a free t-shirt and bumper sticker at davidpakman.com/10 years. At midnight Pacific time tonight, that goes away. So make sure to do that. And remember, you can also support the work we're doing by using the link to Amazon at davidpakman.com. Before you do any shopping there, all you have to do is click that link. I recommend bookmarking it, and then just do your shopping and we'll get a little kickback from everything you buy. For the first time in 54 years, an American flag was raised outside the recently reopened U.S. Embassy in Havana, Cuba. We've talked for months now about the sort of restarting of relations, diplomatic relations with Cuba by President Obama. I consider this a very significantly positive accomplishment. Secretary of State John Kerry said, quote, "The time is now to reach out to one another as two peoples who are no longer enemies or rivals, but neighbors. It is time to unfurl our flags, raise them up, and let the world know that we wish each other well." This represents huge changes to the relationship that has sort of been the de facto, Lewis, since the Cold War era between the U.S. and Cuba. And of course, people responding to this negatively by saying, oh, whoa, 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 Cuba has an undemocratic regime and they're bad and why are we rewarding that? Is it really our place to punish Cuba for their regime while at the same time we are rewarding Saudi Arabia for a far more repressive regime? I know there's resources at play there. I know there's a sort of shared interest in the stability of the Middle East. So it seems like the U.S. just has a lot of reasons to be friends with Saudi Arabia, a far more repressive regime than that one in Cuba, which is, of course, admittedly undemocratic. Elections still not called after 50-something years. But this is the right decision. There is no question about it.
Yeah, I fail to see how this is going to be harmful to our country. I don't see how that could be. And, you know, I think it's better to have, friends close by your borders than enemies. Not that, you know, the state would be an enemy and the people, we know they like America and all of that. But yes, and I'd like to travel there.
I would absolutely love to travel there. I would prefer to do it before it becomes completely Americanized, which often will happen when we see these sort of increases in business relations. I would be very, very interested in going. And I guess my reaction to this is, thanks, Obama, but in a serious way, right? I mean, no, thank you, President Obama. This makes a lot of sense.
I like it. Yeah, I would also like to get there before there's a KFC and Burger King on every corner.
A linguistic analysis of Donald Trump's speeches have confirmed that the Republican presidential candidate talks like a fourth grader, about a 9-year-old, according to this linguistic analysis that was done by Politico's Jack Schaefer. Schaefer ran the text of Trump's speeches and his responses in the recent Republican debate through the Flesch-Kincaid test, which is used to determine how difficult a passage is to understand for English readers. His response is scored around the fourth grade reading level. And for Trump, that may actually be pretty advanced. The other candidates did rate higher, though. Ted Cruz was at a 9th grade level. Carson, Huckabee, and Scott Walker were speaking at the 8th grade level during that debate. And John Kasich was speaking at a 5th grade level. Now, Lewis, we have to remember, this is not obviously illogical, because we know that it's really important for candidates to speak in simple language, to communicate ideas in a simple and straightforward way as possible. But fourth grade really seems to be almost too much.
Well, we discussed, I think it was on the bonus show, we discussed this with regard to music. And
yeah,
much of the popular music in the country is around third and fourth grade level when it comes to this. And I did notice this when I listened to Trump speak. I remember 2 nights ago, I was listening to him speak, and I thought to myself, you know, he really sounds like a little kid when he's talking here. He's just not that well spoken.
But part of that is because he's calling other women pigs, right? I mean, that's also very childish.
Well, I guess that can come into play here too. But, you know, I think that sadly, this may be helping him.
Oh, yeah. This may be working, because it seems that the voters that are into Trump don't want nuance, and they actually may be completely tone deaf to the fact that Donald Trump is so obviously a disastrous candidate for president. And they're figuring out that this idea of good versus evil, right? Figurative black versus white, that it works really well. I'm curious, if Trump is at a fourth grade level, where is Sarah Palin on this scale? Where are her word salads on the Flesch-Kincaid reading scale?
Well, since it's not really English, I think that would be really hard to determine. You know, she's not even forming sentences, so how can you kind of grade it?
I know some fourth graders. My little sister was in fourth grade just a couple of years ago, and this is incredibly offensive to fourth graders.
Is she really upset with Trump and Palin? I think maybe we should have her on the program to discuss this.
If Donald Trump is speaking at the fourth grade level, I do wonder the reading grade level of the people who like him. I don't know what the answer is, but I am curious.
It's a question worth asking. Yeah, let's find out.
The texts of TPP and its European counterpart, TTIP, have been made even more secret. The European Commission is making the TTIP deal even more secret by having put in place a new rule which says that politicians need to go to a secure reading room in Brussels, Belgium, to look at the text. An investigation by German news site Corrective has revealed that the commission is cracking down on TTIP security after there were a bunch of leaks, supposedly by EU member states who had accessed information on the deal electronically. And it is not just TPP that is experiencing this. The U.S.-Asian equivalent, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP, we've been talking about it for months, now is also using the super secure reading room idea. Robert Smith, who's host of the Planet Money podcast on NPR, said, quote, "In Washington, D.C., they love secrecy, but even by Washington standards, this amazed me. In the basement of the U.S. Capitol, there is a room, a locked, soundproof room. The only people allowed in the room are U.S. senators, and they can't bring in their assistants. They can't bring in their phones. They can't even take notes there. Inside the room is not the codes for our nuclear weapons. It's not CIA files. It's not the documents that tell us aliens landed in Roswell. No, in this room is the text of a trade deal." If corporations are not allowed to secretly meet to conspire against the public, price fixing being one example, why is it okay for elected officials? No democratically elected official should be voting on anything that the people they represent can't have full access to read and review and comment on, unless there are specific national security reasons for secrecy. But we're just told, Lewis, that this is just a great trade deal that's going to be great for consumers and voters and everybody. If that's the case, shouldn't the constituents get a chance to read and opine and open?
I would think so. Yeah. So the rabbit hole gets a little deeper here. I think the only thing recently we've seen that had this much of a lack of transparency was probably things related to the Patriot Act and spying across our country. And so, you know, that's pretty disturbing.
Maybe the issue is that these deals are going to screw consumers so hard that if the texts were public, it would cause such outrage that people would be rioting in the streets. I kind of wish that were the case. I am sadly realizing, though, that not that many people care enough about TPP, if they even know about it. Part of the problem being corporate media doesn't really talk about it, that so many people, even if the text was released, I don't know if people would be that up in arms about it.
Yeah, well, we need to keep throwing a fit, and we need to keep trying to get some transparency here, as futile as it may be.
After the break, I will interview Victor Tan Chen about disappearing American jobs.
The David Pakman Show at davidpakman.com.
The David Pakman Show is made possible by you, our audience, through the membership program, and by Polaris Financial Partners, a progressive wealth management firm offering investment solutions, retirement planning, and 401k administration at polarisfinancial.net. Repair the World Apparel, offering eco-friendly clothing manufactured using no new natural resources or chemical dyes, available at repairtheworldnow.com. ShareFile, provider of secure file transfer for businesses at sharefile.com. You're right not to trust the banksters and brokers that so recently ruined the economy to go and invest your money for you. Fortunately, there's a progressive alternative, and it's Polaris Financial Partners, whose CEO Bob Detrick understands that trickle-down economics doesn't help the average person. Polaris specializes in investment solutions, retirement planning, and 401ks, and they develop a custom-tailored strategy for every client. Visit Polaris on the web at polarisfinancial.net. Securities offered through Cataray Grant & Company Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Polaris Financial and Cataray Grant are separate entities. Hey, we've all experienced it, emailing a big file to a client and it's too big to attach, or sending a file and there's no good way to do it securely. We use ShareFile, brought to you by Citrix. We actually use it to deliver the television version of the David Pakman Show to affiliate stations, and it works great. It enhances your workflow, it works easily and securely, and you can get a 30-day free trial plus double storage if you try this out today. Just go to ShareFile.com, click on the radio microphone, and enter my name, David. Visit ShareFile.com and type in the name David.
A goal! Let's drill, baby, drill, not stall, baby, stall.
That woman is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that part. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guy.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him, we didn't want a garden variety politician.
taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
If you like listening to Tom Hartman, Stephanie Miller, David Bender, and all the shows available on the Progressive Voices channel, you'll love the huge selection of new and archived commentaries, current news, blogs, videos, magazine and newspaper articles, and so much more that are available on the Progressive Voices app. Go to ProgressiveVoices.com to find out how you can download the app and help us build a progressive media infrastructure on the mobile internet. That's ProgressiveVoices.com.
Welcome back to the David Pakman Show.
I'm joined today by Victor Tan Chen, who's a sociology professor at Virginia Commonwealth University, editor-in-chief of In the Fray magazine, and also author of the book Cut Loose, Jobless and Hopeless in an Unfair Economy. And I think, Victor, because of so many of the things we've been talking about with regard to the economy, the use of the word unfair in the title of your book is really interesting to me. What elements of the economy are unfair in your analysis?
Well, great to be with you, David. I think there are two things about how our economy is skewed toward those at the top. And one of them is the importance of family advantage. And we forget, we like to think of America as a meritocracy. And, if you really work hard, you can move up the ladder through education, right? That's always the idea. But it so much depends on the family that you come from and how affluent they were. And for instance, just look at the students in the most elite colleges in America. The vast majority of them come from the richest fifth of households in America. And that's just one example. Another one, even more troubling, is the fact that at age three, you can see in testing large gaps in measured cognitive ability between graduates of high school and graduates of college. And we should remember, too, that two-thirds of Americans over 25 do not have a bachelor's degree. So this is a large segment of the population. And the second thing is the way that the game is rigged for those at top. You have at the bottom and middle, you have less power to act collectively. Labor unions and other forms of collective organization have declined, and it's much more of a go-it-alone kind of environment for workers. But at the top, Wall Street is the perfect example of this. There's a lot of collusion and collective work to make things better for that group, right? I mean, you have the twisting of legislation to, reduce taxation on a lot of workers at that level so that, Warren Buffett pays less of a portion of his income than his administrative assistant, right? I mean, it's a way that a lot of actors at the top are skewing the rules of the game in order to benefit themselves and their children.
And I think that with your first example about the sort of generational impact and family pass-through impact on the ability to earn particular wages in life, those who like to deny that this is a thing will often say, listen, David, the rules are exactly the same for everybody, regardless of what type of family you're born into. And I think the best analogy I've heard to point out why that doesn't make sense is if you imagine a Monopoly game where three people play for an hour and then you add a fourth person. On paper, that fourth person is playing by the exact same rules as the first three players, but the property has mostly been bought up. You can't really land on too many spaces without having to outlay 20 or 30 or 40% of the starting cash that you get. And that, to me, is so representative of what we see in the American economy.
Yeah, that's a good point, David. I mean, basically, they have a certain portion of the population, they have a head start in this race. Their children have a head start in the race, right? And you can make it up to some extent with educational policies, but, it's not the case so far that we've been able to do that. In fact, the chance of rising up from your parents' level of income, going beyond that is gotten worse in recent years. We're worse in terms of this social mobility than Canada, France, Germany, these other countries that we don't associate with the American dream of upward mobility, right? And I think there is a greater linkage now between, you know, what your parents made and what you will make in the future. Things have gotten worse in this country.
Let's talk a little bit about the nature of employment and labor in the United States. And we see in many economies around the world that there is this sort of period during which we see a transition from an agriculture and farming based economy through industrialization, often to a manufacturing based economy. And often ultimately, as manufacturing jobs leave or disappear in many cases, a move towards a service based economy. What do you think is taking place currently in the United States with regard to going to an exclusively service-based economy and this idea that if we elect the right person, Donald Trump claims he's the person, he's going to bring back the manufacturing jobs that have gone to China and Mexico? Is that a reasonable expectation, or have many of those jobs simply disappeared or been automated away?
Yeah, a lot of them have been automated away, and things will get worse, I think, in times in the future. I mean, I studied, unemployed auto workers for a lot of my research, and I see them as a kind of symbol of what's going on, what had gone on in the past, right? We went through the 80s and all the shutdown factories and so on, but, you know, they kind of are harbingers of the future, right? You have even white collar workers, struggling in this economy. A college degree is no longer a ticket to a good middle class lifestyle. And even at the top tiers, we need to remember, things are getting tougher, right? You look at doctors, right? You can't get a higher prestige profession than that. A lot of their work is being outsourced or even potentially automated, right? Radiology scans are being sent to India to be reviewed by doctors there and then reports sent back. Watson, that computer that crushed all the past Jeopardy champions, what's he being used for? Well, he's being used for medical diagnoses, and he has, or these kind of systems have actually shown to have a higher degree of accuracy than human doctors, right? So these things are happening at the top tiers as well. But that said, things are particularly grim for workers at the middle and bottom. You have the loss of those good manufacturing jobs that paid well, had good benefits, had strong unions as well. And you've moved to a service economy, which is much more is much riskier for a lot of workers. And it's represented by, say, the Uber driver, right? No job security, no benefits. You're hustling every day to make a living. And that's the case for a lot of workers in retail and restaurants who are scrambling to get hours on the clock, much less have good wages.
Let's talk a little bit about sort of the outlook looking forward. If we combine all of these factors you're talking about, as we look forward, do we need to be thinking at the micro level in terms of, well, how can we sort of make small adjustments and reorganizations to labor and to jobs? Or do we really need to be thinking of a paradigm shift? I've been honest on my show that I think it needs to be a paradigm shift mentality where we have to sort of reevaluate the relationship of humans to work within the economy as we see increased automation and the reduction in so many of these jobs. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think we do need a shift in our way of thinking overall of the economy. Thinking that everyone will have a 40-hour job at least a week and decent pay and decent benefits. I don't know if that is a reality moving forward because of these trends of automation and outsourcing to cheaper labor countries and so on. We have to think politically about how we're going to deal with this. One idea that's being kicked around a lot in Silicon Valley, for instance, is a guaranteed basic income that everyone gets a certain income that ensures they can survive even if they don't have a job, which is increasingly likely in this economy. And that was actually an idea that Richard Nixon was proposed back during his presidency. So a Republican president was advocating for that. It died in Congress. But you could see the political dimensions of this, David, right? The Republicans, there's no way they would support something like that anymore. It's become much more partisan. And that's part of the problem. We got to change the politics and we got to change the culture fundamentally. You know, it's not just about tweaking things within the market. We got to have a broader conversation, as you said, to deal with this.
Let me remind everybody that the book is Cut Loose, Jobless and Hopeless in an Unfair Economy. We've been speaking with Victor Tan Chen, who is a sociology professor at Virginia Commonwealth University. You can also check out In the Fray magazine, where he is editor-in-chief. Thanks so much for being on with us.
Thanks so much, David.
The David Pakman Show at davidpakman.com.
The David Pakman Show is made possible by you, our audience, through the membership program and by Polaris Financial Partners, a progressive wealth management firm offering investment solutions, retirement planning, and 401k administration at polarisfinancial.net. Repair the World Apparel, offering eco-friendly clothing manufactured using no new natural resources or chemical dyes, available at repairtheworldnow.com. ShareFile, provider of secure file transfer for businesses at ShareFile.com. If you're like me, you're probably sick of hearing the tired old plutocratic financial advice of buy gold, buy this stock, short that one. There's a better alternative. Polaris Financial Partners is a progressive full-service wealth management firm that understands the economy does better under progressive presidents and knows how to invest under Republicans, too. Specializing in investment solutions, retirement planning, and 401ks, Polaris Financial Partners tailors the best fit solution for your financial needs. Visit Polaris on the web at polarisfinancial.net. Securities offered through Cateray Grant & Company Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Polaris Financial and Cateray Grant are separate entities.
All the money. Music from the David Pakman Show is brought to you by Nathan Michael Marcuse. For extended listening and downloads, visit nmmusic.ca.
Do we really need all this Hollywood when it drags us down like it should?
If you like listening to Tom Hartman, Stephanie Miller, David Bender, and all the shows available on the Progressive Voices channel, you'll love the huge selection of new and archived commentaries, current news, blogs, videos, magazine and newspaper articles, and so much more that are available on the Progressive Voices app. Go to ProgressiveVoices.com to find out how you can download the app and help us build a progressive media infrastructure on the mobile internet. That's ProgressiveVoices.com.
Welcome back to the David Pakman Show.
Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican from Texas, is running for president. And you would hope that a sort of very low barometer for running for president would include having a basic understanding of the Constitution and separation of church and state. Unfortunately, Ted Cruz is now saying that possibly the only way to save the United States is by essentially turning it into a theocracy. He was on the American Family Association radio program, which, by the way, is insane that it's even acceptable for a political candidate for president to show up on a verified hate group, American Family Association, and talk to them as if it's a normal conversation. Let's put that aside for a second and listen to what Ted Cruz said. And here it is. We need biblical law in the United States.
And I'll tell you, nothing is more important in the next 18 months than that the body of Christ rise up, than that Christians stand up, that pastors stand up and lead. And in this last election, 54 million evangelical Christians stayed home.
How many?
There are 90 million evangelicals nationwide. 54 million stayed home.
Many of those not even registered.
That's exactly right. If we can simply bring Christians to the polls, is it any wonder we have the government we have the leaders we have, if believers stay home and leave electing our leaders to unbelievers? We get exactly what we deserve. And nothing is more important than having people of faith stand up and just vote our values, vote biblical values. And that's how we turn the country around.
Right. We cannot have, Lewis, non-religious people electing our leaders, according to Ted Cruz. In other words, he wants millions of evangelical Christians to go out and vote for politicians who would basically turn the country into a theocracy.
That's, yeah, that's pretty much it. We know that's what he wants. That's probably what Huckabee wants. And this country would probably look like something out of the Middle Ages, you know, maybe 50 years after that happens.
It should be, in a logical and sane world, it should be an instant disqualifier that you show up and talk to a hate group as if they're just normal people making political comments and putting ideas out there. This is a hate group, and Ted Cruz shows up, and he shows that he belongs more as part of the American Family Association than as president of the United States or even a senator. Don't they want constitutional values, not biblical values? Oh, right. People like Ted Cruz think that they're the same thing. They think biblical values are constitutional values, which is not that different from what Taliban leaders wish for, a religious theocracy.
Yeah, it's all the same. The Jews have the same problem too in Israel. There are those who want to turn Israel into a theocracy, and it's you just can't let it happen, because we have examples of countries that are theocracies, and I don't think any American or anyone listening right now would want to live in any of those places.
I would actually suggest to Ted Cruz that there are places in the world that he could go where his ideas would be very much in line. Saudi Arabia is one of those places. Unfortunately, that's the wrong brand of theocracy, right? Typically, those in the U.S. pushing theocratic views want a Christian theocracy, not the Islamic theocracy of other countries in the Middle East.
Well, you know, the Vatican is technically its own country.
Yeah.
And so perhaps we should just take Ted Cruz and stash him away somewhere in the Vatican.
You know, I have a feeling the Vatican would not be that interested in Ted Cruz.
You know what? You're right. I don't think they would want him, which speaks volumes.
Huge retailer Target is degendering all their toys, bedding, home decor, and entertainment. They are no longer going to have girls' toys and boys' toys. And you know what? I think this makes absolutely perfect sense. Target's press release says, quote, "We never want guests or their families to feel frustrated or limited by the way things are presented. Over the past year, guests have raised important questions about a handful of signs in our stores that offer product suggestions based on gender. In some cases, like apparel, where there are fit and sizing differences, it makes sense. In others, it may not. The biggest changes, Lewis, are happening in the toy section. They are going to put all the toys together, and the aisles aren't going to say anymore. They're not going to refer to gender when they say, for example, girls' toys, boys' toys, whatever. And they're not going to have the pink and yellows for the girls and the blues and greens for the boys. I think that this makes absolutely perfect sense. And let me contextualize my view on this. I am not a fan of political correctness for the sake of political correctness and pandering. I am not a fan of degendering the world for the sake of degendering the world. But this seems completely logical. Why are the building blocks boys' toys and the dolls girls' toys? Who said that? Who decided that? Is that nature? You think if we go back to pre-modern media 10,000 years ago that only the boys played with the rocks? I mean, it just makes no sense at all.
Yeah, it seems fine. I don't see there's not really much of a reason to separate the two. You know what your kid is going to like, so you just go and buy it. It seems like just kind of more of a hassle for the stores to have to separate the two. And you know what? If your boy wants to play with Barbies, well, let him play with Barbies.
Conservatives don't like it, though, Lewis. Of course, they found something to complain about. A recent statement from Franklin Graham, president of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, is echoing what a lot of conservatives are saying on Target's Facebook page, which is that consumers should boycott Target, and that it's not gender-neutral people out there who led to Target's success. Graham added, Jesus said, "Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? You can't get any clearer than that," pointing to Matthew 19:4. If you're citing Bible passages for how retail stores should merchandise children's toys, you are really leading the type of life that makes me very, very sad. Because if I'm ever in a place, Lewis, where I'm pointing in retail stores, and I've worked in retail, and merchandising retail stores is absolutely horrible. If you are going in there and saying, let's merchandise based on Matthew 19:4, I really feel sorry for you, because you are leading a life that I would find to be truly sad.
I find these types of people fascinating, the people you can talk to, and it doesn't matter what you're talking about or what the question is, there is a Bible verse to explain anything. Even how David should fix his hair in the morning, there's a Bible verse for it, and they'll tell you it.
The same people fighting losing battles against gay marriage and access to birth control are angry that the toys won't be labeled by gender anymore. That's who they have in their company. And it's truly sickening. And I applaud Target for doing this. Could you possibly disagree with me on this? If you do, by all means, let me know. I know you will. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. Let's take a listen.
Hey, David. We were having questions about aborted babies going to limbo or heaven and what the Christian right would think about a pre-birth baptism, sticking like a syringe of holy water up there or something. And would it then, after that, be okay to perform an abortion because the baby's soul would be saved?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think if you somehow tried to medically do a pre-birth baptism, I don't think it would change the views on abortion of anti-choicers, but it's an interesting idea. On the bonus show today, I am in the middle of a nightmare dog-related situation. I don't have a dog, as most people may know, or I guess I've mentioned before. I am in the middle of a nightmare situation. I haven't told it to Lewis yet because I want his first reaction on the bonus show. We will also talk about participation trophies and the coming autonomous lawnmowers. Autonomous lawnmowers have been approved. All of those stories and more. DavidPakman.com/membership to sign up and see a sample of the bonus show. And of course, until midnight Pacific tonight, DavidPakman.com/10years if you would like to get a membership discount as well as a free t-shirt and bumper sticker. It is a fantastic deal. And why is it happening? You know why. Today is the 10-year anniversary of the David Pakman Show. August 17th, 2005 was the date. And we are celebrating that at DavidPakman.com/10years. Sign up now and we will talk to you on the bonus show. You do not want to miss this dog story.
The David Pakman Show at DavidPakman.com.